Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to What Culture Gaming. I'm Squad, joined by the nation's favourite dish, Josh Brown.
Hello, thank you for that again.
Any single time, it will always come. Now, speaking of things that will always come, Mass Effect is alive and kicking.
Is it, though?
No, but it is alive. So, confirmed by Mr. Jason Schreier, always Mr. Jason Schreier, one of the only journalists that we have in this realm, confirmed at the end of his report on Anthem being rebooted and BioWare taking another look at all their different IPs, that Mass Effect is still in development at BioWare Edmonton. Which is a bit of a thing.
It is a bit of a thing. I'm going to start calling this the Kotaku tease, right? Because it happens every so often where they're doing a big report. The Kotaku, that's the one.
Good.
Where they're doing a report on a completely different thing. Then they're like, also, by the way, this is happening and exists. Mm. We'll give you a line and then we might follow up on it later on. But we're going to give you lots to speculate over.
Yeah.
And Mass Effect is one of these things. This does make sense because at one point the franchise was on ice. Mm. And then we heard some rumblings that something was happening. But Scott, tell me more. What's actually
going on? There's not much to tell you other than it's with BioWare Edmonton, which is their main studio responsible for all your favourite gems from Mass Effect 2 all the way back to the likes of Baldur's Gate and whatever. And the fact that the lead project director is Mike Gamble, which is a hilarious name considering the stakes that are riding on Mass Effect. Sadly, it's not Mike Guaranteed Good Game.
Very good.
Which it's not, that's bad, but I'd like that if that was his name. But anyway, Mr. Mike Gamble's heading it up. He's the dude that came in on Mass Effect 2's DLC, Kasumi Overlord, in Lair of the Shadow Broker, which is easily like the best DLC probably ever,
to be honest.
Absolutely phenomenal piece of work. But he then went on to sort of be heavily involved in Mass Effect 3 and Andromeda, which was, you know, kind of the bit of a downward turn.
The thing is, though, I was checking out the resume before this. Mm. He wasn't sort of like the creative director or anything like that. He was involved, obviously, but you've seen time and time again when people who have worked on franchises for a long time finally get to have their sort of creative say and lead a project. For instance, you know, Neil Druckmann worked on the first couple of Uncharted and then finally got the chance to write and direct Uncharted 4. Mm-hmm. And although he'd worked on them prior to, you know, getting promoted, mm-hmm. it was a very distinct shift from Uncharted 3 to Uncharted 4, in my opinion, away from the Amy Hennig sort of stuff, which is great, but they're just very different things. So hopefully, old Mike has had some ideas for this franchise for a while and will hopefully be able to get to capitalize on them. Because from the reports on Mass Effect Andromeda, which were also from Kotaku, the major issue seemed to be a lack of real creative vision that everyone could sort of work towards. It felt like everyone was just sort of having their, you know, two cents about what the game should be. Everyone was pitching in and there was no sort of cohesive guiding vision that made the game coalesce into something great. Well, hopefully they have sorted this out now. And my friend Mike.
Big Gamblers. I think Gambler is what I'm going to start referring to him as because word that popped into my head. But also, it's weird with that because the original report that came out said that they started out doing this No Man's Sky-esque thing with planet generation and stuff like that, but they couldn't get the technology to work. And so the scope of the project went from being this massive galaxy-wide thing with so much variation, all these different like environments and levels and things that you could go to. And it ended up going all the way down to, I think, 5 planets in the end.
A bit more, not many more.
I hope they don't go down that route again. I've always believed in No Man's Sky, but I think that something like Mass Effect needs a more like through line vision. It needs something in terms of like specific scripting. It needs story set pieces. It needs things to work towards. What do you think in terms of do they try and do an entirely separate story within the Mass Effect universe, or do they end up going back to Shepard again? Because Shepard is alive at the end of Mass Effect 3. He does breathe if you get the secret ending or whatever, so he's still alive.
I don't think you go back to Shepard
because
the idea of picking up the piece pieces of that story. There's just too much that could go wrong for me personally. Like, every player had their own unique journey through that story. Even though the endings were, you know, A, B, or C, essentially, there were minute details that you could change or alter. For instance, you know, the fate of the Quarians or something like that. And having to account for all of those and carry them all over into a new game is just ridiculous, and you'll satisfy no one. But at the same time, you don't want to have a completely different thing like Andromeda and then not live up to its potential. Andromeda should have been good. You have an entire galaxy full of possibilities and new ideas, and yet it just sort of felt the same as the Milky Way. That's my issue. I do feel like you can have, you can continue this franchise and have a sort of clean break away from Shepard and his story while still referencing it, but you just need to be confident in what that vision is. You need to sort of, you know, reboot Mass Effect in a way. You can still pay homage to what came before, but that trilogy is done and we love it, and we need something that, you know, continues from that, but in a way that reinvigorates the entire thing.
The thing with Andromeda, and which, like, because Andromeda is the mixiest bag.
Yes.
10 a.m. that we're recording this. Very mixed bag, and I think that the combat is phenomenal. Well, not phenomenal, but it's very, very solid. And I love the idea of just, like, you know, a certain platoon of people that kind of heed Shepard's words once you find out all the different audio logs and everything behind the reason that they did the Ark project or whatever in the first place, is that a bunch of people believed, you know, Shepard about the warnings of the Reapers coming, and they went off to do this, like, to save humanity and go sideways and, you know, like, go to this other timeline and try and strive out for themselves and everything. I love that as a setup because I think that that still allows characters to have conversations about what happened. And for me, if I was them, I would probably have a conversation somewhere in the game that addresses, like, the different endings or what happened back with Shepard, or just have characters saying, well, I don't know what happened, but, like, oh, I hope, like, this happened, or I have comments on the Reapers or whatever. Some way that addresses, like, through the writers, like, I don't know, like, a way of addressing the massive backlash to that game. Because now we've had, like, two, like, Mass Effect 3 went down in history is one of the most disappointing games of all time. Like, it's not horrific, but I am firmly on the side of, oh my god, what were you doing? And so, like, and after that, Andromeda was like a laughing stock. Like, just overnight, everyone found all those gifs of all the different weird animations, and everyone just kind of pointed and laughed at it. And so they've got so much to come back from. But I think that if you just rely on the Mass Effect IP, like, through the books and through the different comics, and, like, there's even a mobile game and whatever, like, the Mass Effect name is, can hopefully be stronger than that reputation surrounding the negativity.
Hopefully, but my main worry is that even though BioWare Edmonton is apparently back on board and they were in charge of the games we know and love, they've also had, you know, a lot of problems over the years. So a lot of the exposés that have come out have focused on the games they've created, like Dragon Age Inquisition, Anthem, and of course Mass Effect 3. And the through line just seems to sort of be that the culture there isn't conducive to great games. They rely heavily on the BioWare magic, which is essentially a project coming together in the final few months when it's been a complete mess before then. And that worked expertly on Dragon Age Inquisition, but that's increasingly looking like a fluke. That game, in my opinion, was really, really good, but that was in spite of all the issues they faced. And you look at something like Anthem, which, for all its problems, started as an ambitious creative title. Like, there were real creative ambitions behind that game, a lot like Mass Effect Andromeda, but the same issues keep plaguing these releases, and that's a studio problem, that's a management problem. You look at both Anthem and Andromeda, which was made by a different team but had help by Edmonton in the end, and both of those games were essentially made in about 18 months or something. The idea was there for much longer. Yeah, they were in production for about 5 years each, but the bulk of production came right at the last minute, which made for messy, broken games that just had no chance.
I was going to say, like, I totally recommend going and reading the Kotaku exposés on them, just anonymous reports from various staff members that just fill in the reality of what happened on those games' development cycles, because they didn't have a through-line vision that they carried forward. And I think that it's weird, like, BioWare have tried multiple times to do open world gaming, and it's just resulted in giant open spaces with, like, very little to do. Like, Inquisition I was very strong on as well, but I still know, like, that whole problem around the hinterlands and that idea that you could get lost in the opening area and you wouldn't, the game didn't push you out of there, and it had a weird pacing problem where, like, it didn't serve up its best content unless you really, like, you know, went away from the beaten path and sorted it out. And then in Andromeda it was like, well, here's a handful of giant sort of spaces and planets, but again, we're not serving you up the best stuff. It's just, here's a bunch of icons on a map and you could go and do them if you want. Here's some space Sudoku if you fancy it. And, like, all that stuff, just, it's a weird approach to open world. It's like they don't get why a game should be open world. It's like, well, I guess we just take these elements and stretch them out.
And this is my big cautious worry about any future BioWare game is that obviously EA are all in on sort of live service games that you can keep paying for and you can keep, you know, adding content to. But that's sort of antithetical to the kind of RPGs BioWare made before, because even though they were, like, big and they were open, you had all of these different worlds, they were very story driven. They were very, even kind of linear in a way. You could choose different paths, but you were always hit every beat more or less, you know, in a standard path. Yeah. Whereas I don't know if the answer to that is by saying, look, we're still an RPG because you've got this massive space to explore. You've got all of these side quests to do. You've got all these activities to do. That's not the kind of RPG, you know, formula that I don't think people come to BioWare for.
No, and to be honest, like, was anyone even asking for bigger, more open-ended stuff? Like, Mass Effect 2 is one of the greatest games of all time. Mass Effect 1 is still up there. And Mass Effect 3 is solid enough, even though I think it drops the ball story-wise. But none of those games you were playing them going like, oh, well, it's missing this. Like, no, it was an exemplary execution on a certain formula.
Scott Telford, I'm going to tell you what did it, and it was Dragon Age 2, right? Because Dragon Age Origins was this huge, expansive game, RPG, fantasy game with a massive story, and then Dragon Age 2 came out, and it was about one city big, and you were going through the same dungeons over again, and there was no content, everyone complained.
Right.
So then they made Dragon Age Inquisition, which overwhelmed you with content, but went perhaps too far down the other, you know, direction, where all of it was kind of meaningless.
Just
the story
open.
Was great, but it was just like, look, there's lots to do. Whether it's any fun, that's up to you. Stay in the hinterlands.
Ping them
for
up and go
50
find
hours.
Some stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Which I do think is sort of a reaction to Dragon Age, and it might have gone perhaps too far in the opposite direction. And at this point in the industry, sort of, you know, life essentially, where we're expected to get these big games that never end, that provide content forever and ever. But again, that, who says that we need that? Is that just suits? Is that people who play the games? Like, I don't know where that desire for just content for content.
Well, if I was
going
to put my chips down on the board, I would 99% say that it is the nebulous suits at the top, because it means that you can monetize something over time. How long? As long as someone will care. And so I think that that's what they're trying to do with as many, especially on EA's case, like the likes of Andrew Wilson or whatever, as many open, like as many games as a service as possible, platforms for content with loot boxes and recurrent spending methods and whatever. But something I think that whole approach to gaming will be endemic of this generation, and I hope that it dies out going forward. Mainly because the likes of Sony have had this massive first party push for stories, the likes of God of War and, like, you know, going forward, Ghost of Tsushima, and even EA, as much as Jedi Fallen Order started before the acquisition of Respawn, at least they didn't kill it.
That's true.
And it kept going. They did kill a whole bunch of other projects like Project Ragtag or whatever. And so I think that I'm hoping that they see the value of storytelling going forward. They can have their games as a service. You can have your Battlefronts, but you can also have actual focused storytelling as well, because God knows that it's actual good PR.
Scott, I just don't know if I can get my hopes up for it. That's the issue. I hope everything you just said is going to come true, but for me, Dragon Age 4 is going to be the big, hopefully, turning point. It depends. If that game turns into Anthem with Dragons, like, it might, you know.
Well, they've literally said that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's been thrown around. If that happens, I'm not going to be excited for Mass Effect 5, which absolutely sucks, because Mass Effect is my favourite franchise. I might not even be here in this chair talking to you about games if not for Mass Effect 1. I bloody love it. And to be honest, if we're going to get something that just diverges even more widely from what people actually like about the series, I think it's just better off dead.
Not be here anymore.
I just won't be here anymore.
Just bin it all off.
I'll go back in time and then just stop myself from playing it, and then I'll vanish.
Josh Brown is on ice until some time in the future, and we bring him back again. But yeah, let us know what you think down in the comments below. Can Mass Effect be resurrected? Where would you go with the franchise? Should they go back to Shepard, or should they do something new? I guess if you were BioWare, what the hell would you do to make Mass Effect work again? For now though, I've been Scott from WhatCulture.com.
I've been Josh from WhatCulture.com.
I'll catch you next time. Bye. Got nothing for Mass Effect. Got nothing, which is just what BioWare have got.
3. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.